I know you never would forget this, but of course, the Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by our good friends down at 50 West Brewing Company, owner Bobby Slattery, Optimistic Bobby, to all of us on the BBP, has all kinds of delicious beers. Of course, you can go down to the Pro Works or the Brew Pub and drink them fresh down there, or you can just head over to Kroger if you're local here in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky. Four different cans they have now on the shelves. Pick them up. You've got Punch You in the IPA. You've got their delicious American Lager. You've got Coast to Coast IPA. And, of course, Doom Pedal, which is the favorite of my good buddy on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, Jason Williams. I'm with him on that, except I'm a Coast to Coast guy. Either way, you go into Kroger, you pick them up, you got cans, you sit back, crack them, you can watch the draft, you can watch the games, you can watch any other thing that's going on with the Bengals while you have some delicious 50 West beer. Hope you all enjoy their beer and enjoy our podcast. Head on down to 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. It is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented to you as always by our great friends and delicious beer makers at 50 West Brewing Company. I'm Paul Danner Jr. We are again in two different places, intertubing the podcast. It's Fletcher Page back in Cincinnati. I am in Atlanta at the Super Bowl, so we don't get that good eye to eye, man to man podcast banter that you expect, but we'll do our best.
I'm still talking with my hands, though, even though I'm by myself. I won't be typing. I won't be pulling up my Kanye West headlines because everybody could hear me typing that in. So,
but I like the idea of starting to talk about something and then people can literally hear you furiously typing, trying to think of something to go along with it. I like the idea of like actually feeling like the mental wheel spinning in the pod. I think that kind of adds something.
Who could the Bengals be drafting at number 11? I'm checking it out here. Not pulling up a mock draft or anything, but
no. So there's obviously a lot to get to. The first meeting with our man Zach Taylor happened at opening night. It's funny for some, you know, we love behind the curtain stuff here on the podcast, and this is sort of a little bit of that. So anybody, I don't know if anybody actually watched opening night on NFL Network. If you did, you poor souls. I have a list of hobbies I can send to you and other better things you could be doing with your time. But this event started as a way for reporters to be able to talk to the coaches and players during the week. And instead it's just turned into a corporate circus commercial act. And that's all fine and good. It's inside State Farm Arena where the Hawks play. But it also, somehow a giant arena is too small for this event. I don't know how that's possible, but an arena meant for NBA basketball is not big enough to house the absurdity that is supposed to be just an interview session with some players and coaches, because it's turned into, I don't even know what you would call it. It's like a Broadway show packed inside of, like an action thriller, and then in the middle, it's like a bad rom-com with no plot. So, this is sort of what all this is, but it's insane. There are so many people there. I walked past a clown. a literal head-to-toe clown. I walked past, you know, there's like four people with sombreros. Everybody's got a camera. So you're always – it's just wild. All I wanted to do was to find the poor quarterback's coach. But amidst the madness, it's really hard to track them down. So I spent the first 20 minutes circling this area that is just swarmed with people trying to find a lonely quarterback's coach so I could talk to him for the first time. And so it took a while to actually get to him. But when we finally did, we were able to actually chat a little bit about things. Now, the question that we had was going to be, what can you say?
Are you the coach?
Are you the coach or are you a coach? Are you coaching? So basically, you know, there was going to be no – at one point I think someone said to him, congratulations. And he said, I cannot accept your congratulations. And basically, you know, it's pointing out that there is nothing to be it should have been Ron Burgundy style. It should have been congratulations.
So Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals are not Facebook official yet.
No, it's complicated. I would say it's not complicated. I think they don't like Facebook. If the Bengals' current courtship was a real relationship, they'd be in the point where they're clearly together. Everyone knows they're together. They've basically gone out in public around their friend and told their friends and family. Everybody knows, except they just don't really like posting stuff on social media. They think Facebook's become a cesspool. So they've decided, let's just not even deal with that. Because then the extended family start. You got to do all this other crap. So right now it's just that everybody knows it, but we're just not making it. We're not really into social media right now because it causes too many problems.
Right. So we've just got one more week of the innuendo phase.
It's so ridiculous. I've had multiple conversations about this with people, you know, around the local Super Bowl football world here in Atlanta this last few days. And it's the absurdity of this process. And, you know, last year it was put up at the owners' meetings. And I know Bill Belichick was not a fan of it, of changing the rules. But this is ridiculous. What it does to these teams, what it does to these coaches, and the stupidity of acting like there's not something already in place, and that these teams cannot go forward with filling staffs with them knowing for sure with something in writing that the head coach is the head coach. It screws up the whole process. And there's no reason. You cannot say on the day that they do their quote second interview, all right, he is officially signed. He's put in his 2 weeks. He's going to go finish coach's Super Bowl, and then he'll officially start working here. But then you can go on forward filling the staff with that staff being comfortable. There's no reason. This is so dumb that we have to sit here and talk to this guy like he's not about to be the head coach, and he has to worry about saying something that's going to get his future employer or his current employer or the NFL worried about it when everybody knows what's going on. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. That's all.
Hey, Zach, can you blink two times if you've taken the job? Just blink two times.
Just continue talking about how much you love the city of Cincinnati, please. I mean, that was a big – and there's plenty of other things. It's not that we need that, because we could sit there and what happened, and I'm going to play a lot of the audio for you guys that are listening here. You know, there's a lot of relevant topics to cover that are just as relevant whether you're taking the job in Cincinnati or not, even though you are. So there's a lot to cover and a lot of interesting things there. And I thought Zach did a really nice job of doing that and handling a very awkward situation with some grace and understanding of what everybody was trying to accomplish. And I will credit him for that. In that way, I think you got a little glimpse of why the Bengals like him so much. In that a challenging situation. Really, he didn't really have much problem with it at all. And that's part of a head coach's gig, right? No matter what it is, it's knowing how to take tough stuff, understanding when everybody wants to get out of it and execute it that way. It's a sliver of what will define him as Bengals head coach. But I think it also, it is still a sliver and something that you can take away from it. It's not nothing.
Just, it all comes back to communication.
Right? It really does. Yeah. It really does.
Now, to your point about this whole coaching rule thing, it's not like it's college where there's like a recruiting class that needs to be solidified or pursued, or maybe like there's a lot of there's a lot of crossover because you're going to see that team. Maybe it's within the conference, or you know, everybody's so secretive in college. And it's just I just don't understand why you couldn't say, hey, after the Super Bowl, I'm going to be going and taking this job. I don't know why you can't. I just don't understand what the holdup there is.
I don't know either. We'll go into it again in the owners meetings. Here's what I want to do. I want to bring in. I'm cutting up. That, you know, as you can imagine, for the most part, when I was there, for about a total of about a half hour, you know, there were people cycling through, and a lot of them asking some of the same stuff. There was some stuff that wasn't super relevant. So I'm trying to cut down to about 10-15 minutes here. The most relevant stuff I think that you would find interesting of his responses. As we record this now, there's still going to be a couple more sessions, actually. That was actually just the busiest one. There will still be Wednesday and Thursday. All Rams players and coaches will be at their team hotel, and there will be an hour of media availability there, so there will be some more stuff coming. So I want to get to that. We've got other stuff to get to. You talked with AJ Green, who talked a little bit about his recovery and the Marvin Lewis and Zach Taylor thing. So that's going on. I talked to Boomer Esiason and Anthony Munoz, a couple legends, 30 years since Super Bowl 23. But we were talking, the funny thing is they mostly just want to talk about the future of the Bengals. Some stuff there. We'll get to a little bit of that coming up. But first, most importantly, I want to bring y'all a little bit of Zach Taylor from opening night. So sorry about all the crazy background noise. I think you can still hear everything. You should be able to hear everything just fine. But that's just sort of what the environment was. So here's some of him from opening night talking about himself a lot. Here's Zach Taylor.
What is the key to working with quarterbacks these days that's different than maybe it was 10 years ago?
Okay, so I think you got to be a clear communicator. You have to have high standards for them. And you have to help them understand the intent of every team. And so that's one thing Sean's great about. That's one thing Jared's great about is wherever we're unclear on why we're doing something, we immediately clarify that. And we communicate the intent of why we're running the pass play, why we're running the run play. And once you can get that clear, it's easy for everyone to understand and take it to a different level. And so I think that's what's special about our organization is the communication is very clear.
What's the biggest thing you've taken from Sean, I mean, in coming here over the last couple of years?
Non-football, the way that he treats people. The way he treats every person in the building and affects them and motivates them. And you want to take your game to a higher level because of the way that he treats you and the respect he gives you. And you always feel valued. And so anytime you've got a leader at the top of your organization that makes the people feel valued, that gets the best out of everybody. So that's something I definitely want from him.
The NFL has these goofy rules about not talking about things and all that stuff. What is this process? I mean, you've gotten a lot of attention. Has this process been hard? And is there things that you would change about the way it operates?
No, it's our focus has been on winning every single one of these games because it would be a disservice to anybody to put in all this work we've done since April 1st and for there to be any distraction and allow there to be any distraction. And so our focus as a staff has been on let's win the divisional game, let's win the conference championship, and then let's go win the Super Bowl. So that focus has been easy to follow and maintain throughout the this whole thing.
You can't get the ear of the commissioner and say, we've got to change this hiring cycle situation. It makes it tough on guys like me.
That's not my place. You know, it's we put in such great work to be able to get to where we are. And again, it's a disservice for me to take away from that anyway. So we just got to focus on this game and get it done.
Yeah. So what have you taken from Witt? What have you
You know, his leadership as a veteran lineman really has been an influence for our entire team. The way that he approaches the walkthroughs, the way that he helps teach the younger players the ways of the NFL. Really, he's taken those young guys under his wing and helped mold those guys. And so it's been really special to have him around the last 2 years.
He's been talking about how dynamic this running game is. What separates this run? I mean, everybody talks about the passing game, but it's the running game that I think is what got you guys here.
The detail.
Yeah.
The detail of the running game. The detail of the way that Sean communicates it, Aaron Cromer communicates it. Everyone is on the same page. All 11 on the offense clearly understand why we're running a run play and what front we're attacking, and that's communicated throughout the week, and that's a credit to the coaches in charge of the run plan and the players executing it. So it really has been a collective effort, and it's really impressive to watch when it clicks and it gets going.
It seems like it's a throwing league until January. It seems like it's a throwing league until January. And then everybody's running to see who can run the ball the best, it seems like.
I think the balance is important, and that always starts with the run game. You know, if you can establish your run game, then everything else opens up off of it. So, sure, you can win games throwing the ball 50 times a game, but the consistent way to win has always been to line up and run the ball and build everything off of that.
You've had a lot of time coming up in the NFL, then you went to UC.
Right.
What was the UC thing, the allure for you there? Yeah. Why did you like that spot?
You know, it was an opportunity to call plays. I'd been calling plays in Miami, and UC provided that opportunity. And that year was a great year for me from a coaching standpoint, really. You learn a lot about yourself. It wasn't a successful year, right? We struggled a little bit, but sometimes you need those experiences where things aren't so easy to help yourself in the future, and so you can reflect on those experiences. So the people of UC are some of the best people on this planet, you know, and I appreciated my time there, and you know, it gave me an appreciation for that university and that city and the people there, and so I'm really fortunate that I got that year there before I moved on to LA.
I'm sure you would have liked to have the opportunity to come back a second year and make amends for some of the things that didn't go right, but that's not really the way it works.
That's not the way it works, and again, it was you don't want to call it a scar because it was a necessary year for me as a coach, and, but it was a great learning experience for me, and I've taken a lot of lessons from that. Been able to help me in LA and hopefully help me in the future.
When you coach on the side of the ball, same side where the head coach is so involved, and how difficult is it to walk that line of, you know, sort of asserting yourself versus, you know, stepping back when he wants to assert his authority?
Well, when you have a head coach that's open to any suggestions from anybody, and again, you feel valued, it becomes very easy because you can communicate with the head coach, and he's going to communicate to you back, and so you feel like your role is important, and it takes everybody on the staff, you know, big roles, small roles. I think that's what's so great about the staff that Sean assembled in LA is everyone knows their role and knows how to contribute, and it's helped me to see this point.
What do you hope your players say about you as a coach? What is the one thing you want them to say about you if anyone were to ask what you were like as a coach?
That I was fair and I was consistent, and that I helped them get better. I think those are three things that are critical for any coach. I'm not going to change who I am. I am who I am, and I'll never change that. So to be somebody that I think people would want you to be. So as long as you're fair, you're consistent, you're honest with them, and you help them get better, they'll do anything for you. And I think that's a good way to approach things.
Now, a lot of times in football, but there's thought that you got to be a yeller and a screamer, and that's supposed to be what the game is. But is that a thing that you don't really view that way? That would be out of maybe your comfort zone.
Exactly. That is how some people operate, and it works well for them. If that's not your style, then you're going to fall into a trap if you try to be somebody you're not, because you think that a football coach has got to be a yeller and a screamer, and you try to be that way, and that's not your personality, then the players see right through that. So it's important. My father-in-law, Mike Sherman, coached a long time, and he just said, "Be true to yourself, be who you are, people follow you," and I found that way to work for me.
How much did he help you along the way, having that as just someone through your career, just even use the sound?
Absolutely. I worked for him for 6 years. My dad was a coach, and he's been the biggest influence in my life, coaching all my little league sports, and then Mike Sherman, I worked for him for 6 years, and he's been a major influence in the way that I see the game, how to treat people on the staff, and So he's been a huge influence, great sounding board over the course of my whole career.
What are the roots of this offense? Historically, I mean, you're a guy that gets into that stuff. What tree are we talking about?
It's a West Coast influence at its core, but it's certainly evolved over the years. I'd say at its core it's a West Coast offense, but it certainly has evolved over the last couple of years.
Would you say it's the Shanahan
there? Sure, you can see elements of Gruden, Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, Mike Holmgren, all those guys have influenced the system. It's worked for a long time, and it always has to constantly evolve to stay with the times. But certainly there's a lot of those names you can throw out there that would come into our building and hear some terms and immediately be familiar with how we operate.
Holmgren would be the closest to Walsh, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess that would be right.
Hey, Zach, we talked to Shane Waldron a couple weeks ago at Thousand Oaks, and he said he really appreciated the opportunity to be able to interview for head coaching jobs that fit him the next step in his career. He felt like Sean had really prepared him a lot of ways for that. I know you can't speak specifically about what Mary and I have next week, but what does that mean? What does that situation feel like for you?
Sean has been great. It is something that all coaches strive to do at some point in their career. The important thing is to not allow it to be a distraction. Sean has been very upfront and honest with any coach on our staff who's been playing that position. Let us take our day to kind of end all that business and then put it to rest, move on, remain focused. So certainly we're both appreciative of Sean for giving us the opportunity. But we spent the 24 hours doing what we needed to do, and now we've been able to refocus and move on.
What would a ring do for you going forward? I mean, it's the pinnacle, right? But I mean, what would it do for you credibility-wise as a coach? I mean, do you feel like that is something that means more than just, a championship?
I think that's, the outside world may put that label on you, but for us, it's something we've worked very hard for, and it is the ultimate prize in football. So it's a hard question to answer because to us, we're just in the moment right now.
Yeah.
And this is just the next game. It's a big game, but it is something we've worked for all season, and we're just going to kind of devote it. I think it's something you could probably reflect better on after the game.
Yeah.
But right now, you haven't had time to do that. So you're just focused on following the daily rhythm that you followed for the last, since September 1st, really.
Yeah.
And that's all we've been doing. You don't have time to think about anything else.
You mentioned the 24 hours you get. What? How do you cram? I mean, what do you do during those 24 hours? Or are you just like intense? How do you handle that compartmentalization off of everything else?
You just got to be yourself.
Yeah.
Really, honestly. It's just like any test you've ever taken. You can go overboard with the prep, or you can just trust yourself and be yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's the advice that's serving the best. So it's, but it's been nice to be able to refocus back on what's important right now.
Yes.
I've been able to quickly do that.
Were you surprised at the attention that you've received, as a younger guy, as a quarterback's coach? Were you surprised? I mean, Denver and Arizona and the Bengals.
Getting wired.
It's a credit to our organization here in L.A., truthfully. And it's a credit to Sean and all the other coaches because sometimes it's unfortunate that you get singled out when in reality every coach in the staff is very deserving of other opportunities, And so I don't take that for granted. And I do appreciate all the people we've worked with because every single person is somebody who could be a head coach and have those opportunities.
Yeah. Your family, how much football gets talked about at Thanksgiving? Or do you guys, is there like a no football policy around the table?
I talk pretty regularly with my brother. It's a little harder because West Coast and East Coast time.
Yeah.
That makes it really hard. But he's the number one person I talk to, whether it's by text or by phone call.
Yeah.
My dad coached a long time ago, so I talk with him a lot. My father-in-law is a coach, so I talk to him. So we're pretty good about when we're in the presence of each other and not talking all the time, but I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a big topic of conversation.
Yeah. Would you, do you ever in the future want to coach with press, or is it better, like the Harbaugh brothers have kind of stayed separate? You get these brothers, would you rather stay separate, or do you like the idea?
idea of ever being on the same staff.
Well, I know he's my brother, but I also think he's one of the best coaches in the National Football League. I mean, he's one of the most creative guys I've been around. He's a very diligent worker, and you know, at some point in our careers, we'd love to work together. He's in a great place, I'm in a great place, and you don't want to mess that up sometimes. So, but I know he's my brother, but I also think the world of him, and I know that great things on the horizon for him.
Yeah, it does. It seems like there's some brothers that would just rather not mix that in there, but I guess you guys, your relationship is maybe a little different.
We think on the same level.
Yeah.
We're very similar thinkers because we talk so much. We influence the way each other thinks. So you always want to be around people that make you a better coach. And Press certainly has made me a better coach from afar, even though we've never worked together. But I certainly appreciate everything he's helped me with.
Think about Sean, as a young, how did he use his youth? How did Sean use his youth as a man?
Well, he certainly relates well to the players. And, you know, there's always what Sean does a great job of is not only does he relate well to the players and can speak on their level and to this generation of person, but hold them to a very high standard. You know, so it's not like he's a young guy who just acts like one of the players. He's as hard on them as any coach I've ever been around. And they appreciate his knowledge of football, his ability to make them better players, and the standards that he holds them to. But at the same time, being extremely positive. And there's not a person in our building that does not enjoy walking through those doors every morning to see what's going to come out of next. And there's been an environment that's created that is a positive environment. People are excited to see what's next for them. And that's a real credit to Sean and the staff he's put together.
The Miami, that segment when you took over in Miami, is that easy to call that the biggest learning experience of your career, to be thrust into that? I mean, it seems we've talked about interim here when Bill Lazor took over, to using somebody else's stuff, right? It makes it hard to really put your imprint on, or did you feel like you were able to?
You really invest in whatever system you're in.
Yeah.
And so when Bill came in, he did a really good job of teaching the system to all the coaches who hadn't been exposed to it. And so then you have to fully immerse and invest in what you're doing. And so, yes, that was only something I've been a part of for 2 years. You'd rather be a part of a system you've been in for 10 years, like this one I'm in now. But, you know, we were also invested in what we were doing, that we believed in what we were doing. And so then you're just calling kind of the way that you've been brought up in those 2 years. And so you're able just to go with the flow and find what fits best for the team.
You were talking earlier about how, you know, Sean is so open to suggestions from all the coaches and players. And how often do you feel like you have been able to put your imprint on games? Do you feel like that happens on a weekly basis because of the way it is set up with his openness to everybody?
He always is asking for input from everybody. He doesn't care where it comes from.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard to say how much it is per week, but you feel valued. You feel like your input matters. As long as there's sound reasoning and logic.
Five minutes remaining in the Los Angeles
suggesting Rams. He's always open to it. And he just wants to win football games. That's what he's all about.
Yeah.
Whatever you can do to help the team win, Sean will do it.
Yeah.
That's what's great about working for him.
All right, so there is Zach Taylor from opening night, your soon-to-be Bengals head coach. The guy, just not Facebook official yet. So there's a few, I don't know. I mean, Fletcher, you've been reading what's going on and stuff. I mean, what did you think about?
I was going to say, you start us off because I can't type into my computer right now. I can't pull up your story.
Yeah. You know, here's a few things that, that I found interesting. One, we've been asked a lot about working with his brother, Press, who's currently a sort of wonder kid quarterbacks coach in Philadelphia that has people think very highly of. And, you know, there's some brothers that don't like working together, that don't want to, and there's been speculation maybe he would. I thought it was interesting. But he said he would love to work with Press down the road and talking about how he views him as one of the smartest, most creative coaches in the NFL, but pointing out that sometimes you just don't mess with a situation. They're both in good situations. Mm-hmm. And obviously going forward, it's, you know, Press currently being in a very good situation with the Eagles, and wanting to continue to build on that. And maybe they're not necessarily being a spot for him at the Bengals right now. Now, whether that down the road, that could change, you know, if whether, you know, under the assumption that Brian Callahan, also not Facebook official, and comes in and has success for a couple of years or a year and moves up, moves on somewhere, you know, Press Taylor could come in and be an offensive mm-hmm. coordinator with his brother, or move as a quarterback's coach when his contract was up, whatever. I mean, you never know how it will unfold, but I think the fact that he does want to work with him, I think is interesting that down the road, I think we could see something like that happening in Cincinnati. Yeah,
it is interesting because sports and football, it seems like that's what we cover, so we get to see it a lot. You know, there's a lot of family ties with this game, the sport, and in coaching. I just came back from the Senior Bowl where John Gruden's dad was out there with him. That was a pretty special moment. So we see these kind of connections within the sport, and I think it's a feel-good story, and I think we kind of gravitate toward those things. But, you know, nepotism laws are put into place to protect, you know, to keep things fair, but also I think to protect you and your family, because I think it's all good and sweet and a good story whenever you're winning in these circumstances, but you don't want to be like coaching a losing team and have to make a weird phone call to your brother who's the offensive coordinator, or maybe your father-in-law is the offensive line coach, or your old college football coach, you know. So sometimes I think those ties they could come back to be an awkward situation if you're not winning and you got to make awkward calls or decisions or. So I think it'll be interesting to see how these two brothers navigate the next moves in their careers.
Yeah.
And if they do want to jump in the same pool, or if they want to maybe stick to their own path.
Yeah, no doubt. Another thing that kind of stuck out to me, because a lot of, you know, people locally in Cincinnati, of course, point to, mm-hmm. well, here's what I know about Zach Taylor. You know, he coached at UC and they were god awful that year.
And it didn't go well.
Yeah. And so I thought the way he addressed I sort of, you know, from the question in the beginning about why he went to UC. I mean, he had sort of started to establish himself in the NFL, and all of a sudden you jump to an AAC school as an offensive coordinator. It was an odd – it seemed like an odd choice, and I thought him talking about really just wanting the opportunity to call plays made sense. But talking about how, even though they weren't bad, how it was so important for him in his career to go through experiences where things don't go well, and how much he learned from that, and, you know, how it, you know, it, calling them scars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the second he later, you know, references scars again when talking. He actually was asked a question by a Chicago reporter. Talking about their game, they lost to the Bears, and that was a scar that the Rams badly needed and really made them much stronger to make their playoff run, because they learned so much from it. And he, you know, I think that he viewed them similarly in that way. And that's, you know, you've, as a coach, you've got to learn how you're going to respond when you're on your ass. And when things go sideways, and learn from how you handle that and handling it better. I mean, Lord knows the NFL is just a daily rotation of crap being thrown on your desk. You know, whether it's like a player arrest or a coach who's mad or front office junk or AJ Green's toe or whatever it is, or we need to trade for somebody or whatever, you know. There's a million things that show up on your desk every day when you're a head coach. And honestly, you probably are concerned that he doesn't have enough of that.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's part of the inexperience element, is not enough of dealing with stuff that goes wrong and overcoming it. So, but I thought his answers there were interesting.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that was you were in the area at the time. I mean, I remember that being Tommy Tuberville's last season, correct? And so obviously there was a lot more going on than just the offense struggling at that time. But I think that the word failure, I mean, everybody wants like an ascension that like Sean McVay's had, or, you know, you just think you're just going to keep checking off these boxes as you rise up. But, you know, I think failure is something that all of us can relate to. You know, I've had a few bad stories that I've written in my day, or had a few things not work out the way I thought it would at certain jobs. So I think that's part of the progress or your natural progression in any career. So it's something that, as long as you take the notes from it and learn and keep moving forward, I think it's fine. And I did think that his answer, I do have your story pulled up on my phone, by the way. And I think that his answers about that were pretty thoughtful.
Yeah, no, that is one takeaway, is thoughtful, interesting. It talked a lot about communication and being the importance of being good communicators. And those are all things that we had heard about Zach Taylor. I mean, we had heard about that was part of the selling point, is how well he does know how to communicate things and you know, help his players understand. And him talking about, it doesn't matter how much you know, it matters how much the players know. And you see that year in and year out in places that he's been. He was working with the receivers 2 years ago, and you saw, you know, in LA, Robert Woods come in from Buffalo, and all of a sudden he blows up. You see him then get a promotion to quarterbacks coach, and people have been talking all year about Jared Goff's massive jump that he's taken this year, and how much he has a full understanding of the offense under pressure. I was talking with Robert Woods actually just today about that. And, you know, how when his headset would go out, Goff's headset goes out, no problem understanding what the staff wants out of the offense, understanding how to execute that, run it himself, because he's got all that. That all goes directly back to certainly to Sean McVay, but more precisely with something like that to your quarterbacks coach. So, I think that type of stuff, that type of stuff matters for sure. And I do think they are getting a good communicator. Whether that's all he is, well, time will tell.
Right.
But for now, I think that one takeaway, and just in a conversation, can be that much, is that, you know, which is the opposite. Let's be honest. It's the opposite of what we've been dealing with.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know what Marvin said, like, to the players behind closed doors, but you're right. He wasn't exactly the most talkative with the media in a way.
Or, yeah, where you come away feeling like you
learned something.
Or understand something. You feel like you often came away dumber. And that's just true. And I think we all say maybe that's just the way he is with the media, but I don't necessarily think that's totally the case. And there's a lot of people on the inside of that building who feel like they came away not understanding situations well enough. And I think that will be an area where you can see him succeed.
I can't disagree with what you just said, and I don't have anything nice to contribute. So let's move on.
So the other topic asked a lot of Zach Taylor and people wondering is, well, what did you get from Sean McVay, right? I mean, so everybody wants this guy, which, by the way, stop saying anybody's the next Sean McVay. That dude is a freak. It's funny, actually, having heard him now a couple of times in press conferences here in Atlanta or whatever, he has so much John Gruden in him, young John Gruden, in the way he talks and his confidence and energy. And it's honestly, when having done the research on John Gruden as being such a good, young, successful coach, I couldn't help but make the correlation in my mind between those two. And then their offenses are connected. Much talk about offenses and scheme and offensive trees It's like, oh, that's a, oh, that's clearly a that's a Gruden Shanahan Holmgren mix with a sprinkle in of early West Coast. It's like, yeah, no, it's it, it yeah. Every offensive scheme, including the one the Rams were. Oh, that's Kubiakian right there. Yeah, yes, it is. And but everything comes from your own influences, and you know there's a core scheme, and people can follow that. But you know, it becomes your own, so you're not getting, oh, this is this. And I think people want to say, we're going to get the Rams offense, right? Well, right. You're going to get Zach Taylor's version of that, which is a very much, I mean, that's part of it. But everybody that thinks that they're going to get an exact replica of what the Rams are doing, running, you know, three wides and a tight end and a single back all day and, you know, three by ones or whatever. I mean, yeah. You're not, we don't know that yet, because it's how you adjust to what, realizing what you do best on the fly. And that's how the Rams developed where they are now. They didn't start like that 2 years ago when McVay first got there. So it's a matter of how Taylor will assess what they have, what they do best, and then, you know, move that along as his tenure progresses.
You've just given me a great side hustle idea. As you know, I'm a big fan of the side hustle.
You are.
You know the 23andMe DNA ancestry testing and all that? Yeah. We could do like a Blue 28 and you, where it's like we gather all of your offensive terminology and playbook, and we actually can go back through your football ancestry and understand that you have parts of Andy Reid and, you know, some Bill Walsh in here. Yeah. And where exactly your offense originated, where it came from, to better understand where it's going to keep going.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm 42% Otto Graham. Oh, man. That is great. Blue 28 and you. That is fantastic. Right. We've already got the name. What else do you need? Oh, that
We're
is.
We're on it.
Oh, yeah. Only 3% Kubiak? I don't believe this test is bullshit. Oh man! All right. I guess we didn't quite answer where we started there about what he got from Sean McVay.
Oh, that's, you
know,
right. Sorry.
And I thought you know, his answer I thought was good there. Was it talking about how, you know, making everybody feel valued and everybody feel like they are part of it, only caring about winning, not caring where the idea is coming from, wanting the ideas to come from the players and the coaches below him and have that feed up to create the best program they can. I don't know if that's something that wasn't happening under Marvin Lewis. None of us really know enough about the inner workings of what was happening there to say that will be a totally distinct change, but fresh eyes and up and down the organization, I think, will go a long way to getting some new, fresh ideas that can create everyone's favorite word right now, the spark that they need.
That's right. Culture and communication.
Culture and communication makes spark.
That's right. Leads to spark.
Leads to spark. Speaking of, AJ Green was at a soup. Was it at a soup kitchen?
It was at a food bank.
Food bank. Okay. So good for the Bengals and AJ Green. It was, and Wyoming High School was there, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
They're fresh off an undefeated championship season. I think for AJ, you know, this is something that he's had to answer to a little bit here recently in his career. And you know, he's been in a walking boot since December. He said he's about to get that off in a week. And he's still a couple months out from, you know, probably being able to do AJ Green things all the way to the max. But he's on pace, on the right track. And he kind of joked whenever I asked him, you know, when do you think you'll be back 100 and ready to run and do all those things? And he said, I'll be ready before the first game. And then he said, first regular season game. And he thought that was funny. So he's not too concerned about anything that's going to happen in April, obviously, now this deep into his career, but he's on track to be back 100%.
You know what I'd tell AJ Green? Go disappear until September and then come back and be great. I don't care. I don't care what mm-hmm. you do this offseason. Take, you know, you got a new kid. Come and, like, be a family man, dad. Just specialize in not getting hurt and hanging out and get yourself ready however you'd like to. I don't give a crap what you do. Just I'll see you when it's time to play for real, because nobody needs – he does not need to be screwing around. He tells you want to learn the new system and meet the new – and develop camaraderie. That's all great. I want A.J. Green to be healthy and just go out there and be a freak and not mess with it. There's no reason – honestly, there's barely a reason to care if there we know that he's going to be – as long as this doesn't – the setback doesn't occur – this shouldn't mm-hmm. even be an issue down the road. So, but good to hear from him. And a lot of these guys we haven't talked to since all of this has started to go down. And I think you could sense, it seemed from your story, you know, you being there, you can back this up, that there was like legit excitement about the change though.
Yeah, he kind of echoed some things that I picked up at the Senior Bowl from some people and just things that we've picked up in January is that, you know, AJ came into the league to, you know, playing with Marvin Lewis. I think there's a lot of respect. You know, Carson Palmer talked about this, a lot of respect for Marvin. And it's the only coach that AJ's known. And I think there was a lot of sadness and maybe like some guilt there for AJ that he wasn't ever able to get over the hump of that playoff win, and finally get that. And Marvin had to go out without that. And I think AJ sort of with his answers was saying, I really hated that this had to happen, but it was time. And so change has kind of created a little bit of excitement. And he used the word, it's the spark. It's the spark we needed.
Yeah.
So it's like a little bit of guilt, but just understand it's a new beginning too.
Yeah. It's similar, you know, in talking with they do this CBS thing at the Super Bowl where everybody that's associated with CBS and their broadcast is in this ballroom and they all talk and Tony Romo tells jokes about how, you know, they talk about how he's, you know, knows the future and should work at the Weather Channel and all this garbage. And anyway, but eventually you have the opportunity to talk to anybody that works there, that included Boomer. And so given the opportunity to talk to him, he talked about how, you know, he's been advocating for a long time that they needed a change in how stale everything was, and that's no secret, but that he actually really liked how they have basically cleaned out the entire staff. Uh-oh, a dog. Alert! Alert, a dog. Listen, this has happened before, and people that listen to the BBP threatened to kill my previous partner Jim Lazarski's lovely dog for your dog. I don't want anybody to freak out and think about murdering a dog.
My dog has a patella tendon that's dislocating. But I have a great story about the BBP with this patella tendon.
You do?
I had a doctor in the Cincinnati area reach out to me after listening to the BBP last week.
Really?
And he's given me some second opinions and given me a couple of good names in the area that I could consult with. As my dog works through this injury, certainly is like AJ Green is. It wants to get back on the field and will be ready to go by the start of next season. We're just trying to figure out the best way to handle this moving forward because, you know, it's quite an expense. So
what is your BBP? What is your dog's season?
We're going to get him ready for the frisbee after a stint.
Oh yeah.
After seeing just how the bar is so low for frisbee dogs at halftime. At least in Paul Brown Stadium. I'm like, look, I know my dogs can do this if healthy.
Yeah.
So, no, I have one dog that can catch a Frisbee at least at the level that we saw in December, and we're trying to groom up our other dogs. So we got to be healthy first before we do that.
Yeah, if there was ever – that is really like everything top to bottom organizationally needed to change. The Frisbee dogs are included in that. That needed a complete cleaning house of the Frisbee dogs. Get some new ones in there. I want to see your dogs involved next year. That would be a special moment.
We'll get it on the Instagram. Anyway, sorry for interrupting you with dogs barking and dog talk.
It's okay. No, I would say, you know, as far as Boomer was saying, you know, he likes that there's the entire – that there isn't all of this leftover of the previous staff. While there's obviously some, the cleaning house is really what is most needed to just get totally fresh eyes as a chance to really start over in Cincinnati. And he actually sounded fairly optimistic about that direction as well. I mean, inevitably, it all comes back to if Zach Taylor is the guy or not. If he's young and energetic and his fresh eyes have the answers, or if he's young and energetic and over his head. But I mean, you know, I thought someone who has very close ties to the organization, is invested, understands the situation, being pretty optimistic. Because I've talked to Boomer in these situations before the Super Bowl, and his take has not been so rosy. He's not afraid to rip the organization, as anybody that has followed him closely knows. So I thought that that was something. Also, talked to Anthony Munoz while I was down here. He used the term cautiously optimistic, mostly talking about more being interested in what happens with the staff, you know, pointing out, he said, you know, Forrest Gregg, was his head coach, but he never coached him one day in his life. He was coached by Jim McNally, who was his offensive line coach, though. And those guys are really the ones that will make the difference in whether things succeed or not. And as this staff still sort of hangs in limbo and we wait to see who all will fill all of these positions, that's really, in his opinion, he said, what he was most interested in. And as far as where that's at right now, there really has not been a lot of movement that anybody knows of outside of, the rumors that have been out there of, okay, we're watching, we are under the assumption of Brian Callahan. We are thinking Jack Del Rio, John Fox, somewhere in there on the defensive side of the ball. And beyond that, you know, we haven't gotten any further into whether Bill Callahan will be able to get out of Washington. You know, there's a thought that they're going to block him and not allow that. But we don't know any of that for sure yet. And we really can't until an offensive line coach is filled here and we get, or Washington announces their full staff, which they have not done yet.
The Bengals have been very secretive about this. No thanks to John Gruden. other than Gruden's whistleblowing, we really don't know much about what's going on.
No. Well, yeah, and it's funny, it was brought up to me that, well, things, it's sort of the way it used to be. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of leaky stuff that used to come out of the Bengals. But when all the staff leaves, all of a sudden, all the leaking stopped. So who knows? I mean, how much of that stuff is connected when you get these nationals involved and everybody's got their guy on every staff. And as we always tell you here on the BBP, those people saying those things aren't talking to the people that matter. And that goes back to when people were laying lines of thought about Marvin Lewis or laying lines of thought about anything important to Bengals organization. It wasn't coming from where it mattered. It was coming from a lot of other places. So it's kind of proven itself out a little bit as this process has gone on.
I mean, according to one report, Marvin should still be in the woods reflecting on his decision.
Oh, yeah, right?
He should just now be coming down, coming out in the woods to announce if he's staying or leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, he came out on a, like, barreling through on a snowmobile holding the answers in his right hand.
Well, I want to bring up something that's maybe a little bit cliche or corny, but when I was at this at the food bank watching the high school team put these meals together, former Bengals guys David Fulcher and Jim Breach talked to the team.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see them. The team was really like attentive and they were really into the message. It was pretty cool that David and Jim have hung around Cincinnati and they do a lot and they help pack up some lunches too. So, you know, getting to see those kind of charity events is cool. But man, when AJ walked into that room, and see, I guess we get to see the way we see the team in such a different light, you know, like I was, it, we see them on a daily basis in the locker room and on the field. But when AJ walked in there, like the, it was like the entire room was kind of like, kind of just sort of like, oh my gosh, there's AJ Green. Yes. And there was people in the building that I didn't even know were there. Like it was just like random men and women just sort of like standing to the side with their iPhones out, like videoing AJ walking around. And I was like, this whole scene just completely changed. So it was really neat to see. And then to talk to Fulcher and Breach later, they were talking about just how much AJ's done for the community, how much people like Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson, those guys getting out, and how cool that, you know, former Bengals players think and get to interact with current ones in these kind of situations with a high school team as well. It was a really cool scene. So I know that that might be a little bit corny or whatever, but I thought it was pretty neat.
No, it is. I maintain AJ Green is one of the most universally loved Teflon athletes this city has ever seen. And I mean, he just can do no wrong. You know, there was a point in time where he took some heat for he had not played super well in some playoff games as also, and he was kind of getting lumped in there. But still people kind of were like, yeah, but we still love him. But he's just as untouchable as any athlete in Cincinnati has ever been. And I've been around this place mm-hmm. for a while. In my opinion, you know, and
right,
you know, Larry Fitzgerald signs on for another year in Arizona, it's again a reminder about how much AJ loves Larry, and you know, you could see him wanting to replicate that, play his whole career in one place. Mm-hmm. He's beloved in Cincinnati. I'm still of the belief that they'll get something done with AJ to keep him in stripes going forward into his 30s, because it's just for a team mm-hmm. for a team that's trying to stay and continue to connect with this fan base and reconnect, I should say, with its fan base. Keeping 18 around would be part of that scenario,
right? Well, you know, Campbell's donated 25,000 cans of soup on behalf of the Bengals, so they could have had anybody go out there, and it's like what, 20 degrees, and AJ's in a walking boot, and AJ showed up there with Houdet. So I got a great photo of Houdet picking up a box of Chef Boyardee that I tweeted. So I'm always fond of Houdet's movements after the field goal shenanigans he's had. So it was just a cool scene. So
I really would like to have seen the difficulty that Houdet had working with this individual cans of soup, considering his paws, the big hand situation. I would like to see him have to do more intricate tasks just for my own amusement. What else do we got going on? Big Wit is here. Obviously, he's kind of getting his time on the stage. His kids were running around opening night. CBS is actually doing a behind the scenes this week with him and his family, his wife Melissa and their four kids, which I think is going to be really cool. So if you're looking for something in the pregame on Sunday, keep an eye out for that. You know, I'm going to have more on him later this week. He's got a lot of very interesting things to say, as always, but particularly about the Bengals and culture and how quickly things can change. And I think it's going to play into a story I'm going to have later this week. And those that listen to the BBP know this, I've preached it, and that is, why can't the Bengals be like the Rams? There's more to it than you may originally think on the surface. But you know, Ant Whitworth kind of talked a little bit about that. Some other people did as well, and you can draw a lot of parallels there, which I will do. So keep an eye out for that coming later this week. Plus more from Zach Taylor as we sit down with him a couple more times. Hear from some of I'll be
bringing you some stuff from some of his players that have played underneath him and some observations from them as well. So lots more coming here from the Super Bowl. So keep checking in Cincinnati.com. We'll have stories and all that stuff coming to you. The BBP will be back next week, as we'll probably have some sort of official announcement in preparation for then a press conference. So we'll be updating you as that happens. The staff fills in, all kinds of crap coming your way. So it's busy time. You know, people always laugh. Oh, what are you going to do in your off season? I don't know. Probably work harder. Because this is as busy as it gets in season right now for everybody, because there's a whole lot going on.
It's been a weird January.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this is coming to an end and we no longer have to type things like future coach and proverbial hire and things
expect
of that nature.
It.
Expect, yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, a long December to a weird January. Can we just get a normal February, a normal month? Something that isn't wacky.
Yeah, I just want to cover a mini camp.
Oh, God.
I don't think anybody's ever said that.
No, what an awful thought. You know what I like? A nice rookie mini camp.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
An optional veteran mini camp.
What else do you got? Do you have any Kanye? Any today in Kanye's?
There's
What's
a it's a diversified Kanye West day. Kanye West takes credit for revitalizing Jay-Z's career, sues Rockefeller Records. So I think the first part of that headline's correct. Then
why is he suing them?
I think he wants ownership of the masters and the all that stuff. That's usually, but then the very next headline is Kanye West deny suing Jay-Z over publishing from Rockefeller Records. So a little bit of controversy there. But here's the most Kanye West headline of the week. Kanye West refused to pose for photographer he invited to Uganda.
Hey, come to Uganda with me. Kanye, can I get a photo? No.
No photos.
No photos. Mental, why did you bring me here with all of my equipment?
Mental images only.
Oh, man. That's great. I'm going to start doing that. Invite people over to my house, and then when they ask for a drink, be like, no, sit outside.
No drinks. No food.
No drinks, no conversation. Go outside.
Imagine the drinks.
Oh, man. All right. Let's wrap it up. Things to do, places to go. Anyway, again, keep it locked, Cincinnati.com. We'll have all the content from you for you from down here in Atlanta. More stuff on Zach Taylor, more stuff on Andrew Whitworth. I talk with Rex Burkhead. We'll have post game from the Super Bowl, catching up with some of those guys as well as they potentially get their ring. I couldn't be happier for Whit. I think most people that know him or followed him in Cincinnati have a pretty clear rooting interest, as well as 99% of America. Like, who's rooting for the Patriots? Like, who's rooting for Tom to win another one at this point if you don't live in Foxborough or just, hell?
Just one more. Just one more.
Just one more. Exactly. All right. Well, it was good chatting on the interwebs with you. We'll be back in person next week.
Hopefully so. It'll be good for you to see all the hand movements I'm making during these.
It will. It will. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. And we will talk to you next week. Have a good one, everybody.